my first question was, when, at what age did you start showing an interest in music?
14.
And why? What got you there?
I heard Smoke on the Water. And I went out and bought Machine Head, because that's the album it came from. And I just freaked out on the whole thing. And then I went and bought Made in Japan, which is actually the one, the hit. When Smoke on the Water was first a hit, it was the live version was the hit. I didn't know that. So then I went and bought the live record. And that was even cooler because there's more guitar solos on it. And I decided I had to go out and buy a guitar. So I had money saved up for a tent and for Boy Scouts. And I decided to take the money from the tent and put it towards a little guitar and amplifier combo that the local music store had. And I bought it and, like, just started freaking out. And, you know, within a month or so, I'd quit Boy Scouts. And that was the end of that, or the beginning of that.
Were you taking any formal lessons at that time? Or?
I got 4 free lessons with the guitar and amp from the music store. And the guy had, like, yellow hair. He was a wrestler. He was trying to... Like, he was a struggling wrestler that was teaching guitar to support his habit of trying to make it as a... It was pre-WWF, but whatever it was back then, he was trying to make it. And, but he was kind of clueless. And so for 3 lessons, I couldn't play anything. And finally, at the 4th lesson, he said, maybe I should think of, like, not trying to learn to play guitar and trying to do something else with my life. And I asked him, I said, dude, can you take this guitar and can you, like, show me at least how it works? Because I can't get any sound out of it out. And he took it. And he couldn't even make a sound come out of the guitar. It had action of like an inch high and strings that were like ultra, ultra heavy on it. And it's like he couldn't even play it. This guy was like a wrestler. So he took it in the back and gave it to their workman guy. And the guy took it and lowered the action and put lightweight strings on it. And I took it home and played all 4 of my lessons in like 15 minutes. It was all of a sudden really easy to play. And so that was that. Then I was done with lessons until I went to college. Then I took, you know, in school.
So there wasn't a point that you were still, I guess my question is, after that 4 lessons, was there a moment or some catalyst that you really became serious about playing?
No, it's like I was never, like that moment when I went home and said, I can figure all this stuff out. I just went home and started figuring things out on my own. And it was almost like that rejection of going to a teacher made me decide I was serious because I had to figure it out on my own. And I just, like right from the beginning, you know, after 4 weeks, I just lived with the guitar strapped around me all day, every day.
So from that point on, you were fairly certain that you were going to go to school for music or that you wanted to pursue it?
Maybe not consciously, but I just decided that that's what I wanted to do.
And where'd you go to school for music?
University of Illinois first. I wasn't a music major there, but I was a music minor. And then I switched to, then I went to College DuPage for a while, and then I went to University of Miami in Florida and was a music major there, and then transferred back from there because it was insane Miami Vice drug world. And so I came back here and wound up going to Elmhurst College and finished my degree there in composition arranging with a minor in guitar.
All right, well, that's, a decent summary of the past, would you say?
Yeah, it's, played in bands constantly, in rock bands where we wrote our own tunes, and, you know, by the time I was in college, you know, I was kind of a jazz fusion head, and so I was playing in fusion bands, instrumental fusion bands, and we were writing tunes and taking big extended solos and trying to copy Weather Report and Pat Metheny and Jean-Luc Ponty.
What age did you start playing professionally? Which, meaning, start getting paid,
I suppose. Getting paid for it, yeah. No, I got a band that was playing the circuit, played at, like, high schools and some clubs and did summer concerts outside. They were auditioning for a guitar player, and I got the job. And so, and I was, I want to say, it was my senior year in high school. So 17 or 18, whatever I would have been at that time.
What kind of tunes were they playing?
Like slightly progressive rock, like Styx and Kansas and Joe Walsh and that kind of thing.
So. When did you make the jump from rock to jazz?
It had to do with being interested in all that kind of music that already had little hints of classical music and little bits of jazz in it. And I was really intrigued by that. And so I just started following the chain of, like, I was a Jeff Beck freak. And Jeff Beck freely admitted that he'd gotten his stuff from John McLaughlin, was his inspiration. Well, John McLaughlin is considered jazz, so I checked out John McLaughlin, and he started talking about Miles Davis and John Coltrane and people like that. So I started investigating them, and it all just keeps leading you. But then as, you know, as I was getting into the Mahavishnu Orchestra, then they're always mentioned in the same breath with Return to Forever and Weather Report. And so I started checking those guys out, and that led you to all these other things. And so it was just like, but it all came from the rock, the progressive rock thing, these rock guys, you know. It's like, what are they doing? Who are they checking out? And then you check out who they checked out, and then you check in, et cetera, et cetera. And it just keeps you going.
That leads me to my next question. How did you, knowing you and knowing After the Harvest album, big leap from being a rock fusion guitar player to doing what you're doing on that album? You know, how and why and inspirations?
Wow, that's a good question. I think because in the late 80s, right up to almost 90, I was playing lots of jazz and going around playing with jazz groups. I led the Barons, jazz group that played around Chicago in the late 80s. And we played at, you know, all the jazz clubs that were around at that time. And when that band broke up, I was just kind of disillusioned with the jazz scene. And I'm like, I don't know what I want to do with this music. And I was kind of at an impasse with it. And I felt that a lot of the other people around me were playing forms of jazz that were not interesting to me. And I just didn't see anything happening. And I began a kind of just a wandering pilgrimage of looking at different things. I've always had an interest in world music, of, you know, meaning musics of all cultures of the world. But I had this feeling that I couldn't go and spend my time studying African music or Brazilian music or flamenco music or anything like that unless I understood more about my own music. And so I started investigating American folk music more. Just at first, just purely intellectually, because I figured I better, because I'm an American. You know, I was born in Iowa in the middle of the USA, so you ought to know something about that kind of stuff. But as I started to get into it, I developed more, it began to hook me, just like the jazz. I figured I should learn about jazz because that's what the rock heroes that I had at the time were listening to. But once you get into it, you get hooked by the music itself. And the same thing happened with the folk music. And at the same time, the medieval thing in music school, you have to take music history. Well, while I was studying music history, medieval and Renaissance and early Baroque music, it hooked me. I was really interested in it, even though I had to learn about it at first because that was part of the program at school. Well, I got into it on its own merits, you know, not because I had to, and I just kept investigating it. And the sound of the instruments and things just seemed sort of similar to me between the American folk music and the medieval music. And then the medieval composers used these almost abstract, quasi-mathematical concepts to design their compositions. And the modern composers that I was digging, like Steve Reich and Arvo Pärt, were looking at the medieval composers also for their inspiration, and we're writing very, very modern music. And so I just saw this kind of connection between the modern classical music, the medieval music, and then the traditional American folk music and the medieval music, and this little three-part triangle sort of cropped up in my head. And so that's where that came from, is trying to blend those three things. Plus, I'm an instrument freak, and so I had bought all these instruments to play all these musics on, and they all sounded good together, so I wanted to blend them.
This is the question that you hate the most, but it's probably the most relevant question for this. Also the most difficult for you to answer. How would you describe the music that you write? My notes say, can you pick a genre? Or can you pick six? Can you even limit it to six? I know it's a nearly impossible question to answer.
Well, yes and no. It's easier to answer if I kind of break it in half and say, you know, the music that I was writing for After the Harvest, that's very difficult to categorize, and it would have to use, you know, certainly those three, the medieval, the folk, and the modern classical, but there's certain hints of rock and jazz on there as well, too, because there's quite a bit of improvisation, which brings in the jazz element. Even a couple of the pieces have little echoes of a jazz sound in the back of them, and then rock, certainly playing the electric guitar on there a little bit, brings in the rock. and even just, you know, the attitude of it had this rock thing. But that's, I mean, where I'm going now has got kind of a very different thing to it, because it was really discovering flamenco. It really spun my head around for a variety of reasons. One is because the music is beautiful. It's the folk music raised to an art music of Spain, which is kind of what jazz is here in America. As it started out as folk music, but now it's written, you know, been raised to a purely an art music level of intellectual development and sophistication, and flamenco is in that same boat. And then, you know, secondly was the spirit of flamenco, the mood that it creates. It's the same mood that always hooked me with my favorite rock bands and jazz artists, you know. I mean, in jazz, Miles Davis had that mood. I mean, he even recognized the connection to Spain and flamenco because a couple of his records were very Spain-influenced. You know, and in rock, the haunting sound of Led Zeppelin, because I love Celtic music, it has that same haunting sound. And Led Zeppelin was very into traditional English folk music and Celtic music, and it drove that. So then there's the other level of the flamenco guys are freaking out on the American jazz and fusion that I was so into when I was in music school, and shortly thereafter, they, you know, they ate that stuff up, saw a usage for that to advance flamenco into a very sophisticated modern music form. So they loved Weather Report, and all their bass players in the flamenco bands all have the strong Jaco Pastorius imprint on their bass playing, and so it's that kind of thing. And then going to Spain and meeting some of the flamenco artists, the way that they, you know, even though I'd kind of burned out and got disillusioned on American jazz, the way they were looking at it got me excited again, because they were excited about it and saw it as something exotic and were looking at all the good points of it that I'd almost kind of forgotten about, and re-examining it in that light was like, oh yeah, that's interesting. You know, plus they combine it with symphony orchestras and all these other things that have always been in my mind of areas of interest. It just completely excited me. So now the music that I'm writing, I'm kind of drawing back on some of the jazz and the fusion that I'd listened to, you know, 20 years ago, but looking at it through these new goggles of the flamenco players and bringing in some of the flamenco that I'm learning now.
On to the new stuff that you're doing. Tell me about the new stuff that you're writing. And, you know, obviously we know you've been digging on flamenco, and definitely several things happening that you've been inspired by lately.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, just running along the lines of what I was just saying to answer that is I'm obviously drawing on a lot more of these things that I almost wrote off of on After the Harvest. I wasn't using the fusion. There's very little jazz on there, although there's a little. And the music is much more ethereal on there, whereas now I'm interested in more tight, concise construction. The music on After the Harvest was very wide open, and the structures were not very rigid at all. Or not very rigid isn't the best word. They weren't very obvious. You know, you have to kind of like look at it very, very closely before you start to see the patterns and the structures in it. The music I'm interested in writing now is much cleaner as far as the structure goes, where there are themes and you can, the music is much more tightly packaged, even though it might open up in some wild improvisation, because that's another thing I'm interested in is the free music that grew out of the AACM in the South Side of Chicago during the 70s and is still continuing actively to this day. It's a great genre, if you want to call that, or movement, and then Ornette Coleman. And so I've always got that buzzing in my mind constantly, and that was even a part of the After the Harvest. But now, you know, I'm looking at using that as them, using those artists as inspirations for when I want to open it up. But when it's more tight and clean, I'm looking more at some of the jazz fusion and what some of the flamenco writers are doing now, where they're creating these tunes that are like very intelligent, but very cleanly put together. Architecture is very, you know, clean. It's just a good word for it.
When I think about jazz fusion, I think about, you know, like classic 70s rock jazz fusion, which I think is not necessarily the way you're going to go. Maybe talk about the
instrumentation. No, not so much. I think it's still a little bit more based in acoustic music and not so heavy. The problem with rock beats is that they tie you into a rigid rhythmic structural box, which is what you want in rock. That's part of what makes the music strong and powerful, is it like you want to bang your head to this rhythm that's just driven out by the drums. I don't want to say anything negative about that, but for what I'm trying to do, the problem it causes is it creates this box that you're stuck in, this square rhythm. And in flamenco and in, you know, like Indian music, meaning, you know, in music of India, Indian classical music, the rhythms are very rolling forward. It's very powerful rhythmically, and African music as well. Very, very rhythmic, but the rhythms, because they're stacked on top of each other, you don't hear this box that it's like, boom, here's the pattern, and now we start over again, here's the pattern. And whereas in, certainly in flamenco, definitely in African music, completely, Indian music, and even in modern jazz, the same way, the rhythm is kind of flowing and rolling, and there's this understated pattern that is repeated, but it's not obviously stated. And so that's the reason that I'm trying to be careful of too much of the rock fusion influence, because it creates these overly defined boxes. But that's all. Other than that, I mean, a lot of the things that they were doing were good. Yeah, obviously you got to watch for auto. You know, they created some wonderful cliches, and you got to stay away from those. But it's almost been so long that those cliches have lost their danger in a little way. So, you know, but still, you got to watch out for bad fusion cliches. They were bad back then. They're still bad.
You may want to edit this question. Let me. You know, you don't ever like to bring up anything negative, but one of the questions I had is, what bores you about music and art? Is it something you...
Wow. That's a good...
It's a two-part. It's what excites you about it, the music and art. And you could take it even just what's inspiring to you, period. Not necessarily within the confines of music and art, but what things inspire you to pursue music and art, and what things do not inspire you in that same...
Well, the answer is almost too simple. It begs an extrapolation, is that when somebody has something to say, it inspires me. But that's so open-ended. It's like, what does that mean, that somebody's got something to say? Doesn't everybody who makes a piece of art have something to say? But it's... when somebody has something to say that shows you, maybe I could use poetry as the best, because I've been involved in poetry for a long time with the Pong Unit and the Mark Smith Project and the Poetry Slam. In great poetry, five words say 11 different things. You know, the longer you look at them or mull them over in your mind, you start to see all these connections, and it spins off and... you know, it says so much more than it says. And that's what's so great about the poetry, is it's elliptical. There's like tons of stuff between the words that's there. And that's what I mean by something to say, where they say whatever it is that they say, but by saying that, there's so much more that's revealed by it. And the longer you look at it and check it out, the more and more it reveals. And so in music, that's what I'm looking for. And it crosses all stylistic barriers, you know. It doesn't interest me what style it's in. It's if it has that thing where it says really more than it says, which then demands more of your attention to to look at it. And painting, you know, would be the same way. Is that if there's more going on there than your first glance tells you, you know, it's impressionism would be a classic example. Impressionist painting, we've seen so much of it. You know, everybody's seen Renoir's, you know, picture of a vase of flowers. It's like you look at it and you want to just roll your eyes, because you've seen 1,000 bad imitations of it. And even the masterpieces you've seen reproduced so many times that it's boring. But yet when you look at it, there's so much more going on there than, you know, if you get past the fact that we've turned it almost into a cliche, there's just tons and tons of action going on there, thought going on there. And then if you put it into the historical perspective, understand that these guys were radicals at their time. You know, they weren't cliches at all. They were, you know, complete radicals. But yes, I don't know, that's the best. And I guess what would bore me would be things that don't have that, where you just look at it and you see what you get, even if it's really, really complex. You know, a lot of music that's overly complex, it's like by saying so much, they've said everything they had to say, and there's none of that between the lines kind of stuff. It's too much. But some music that's complex is just rich. It's like a tapestry where you keep looking at it, and there's more and more and more.
Talked about this already, but just as a straight shot question, I mean, what's your plans for the next 6 months / year? What are you working on?
I want to put together an ensemble to perform this new flamenco jazz combination music, and so I need to work out my ideas, and so I'm in the midst of writing pieces now and seeking the players to put the group together. And so, of course, I'm going to continue playing the solo shows that I've been doing, because that's a great way to work some ideas out without having to either pay someone else to do it with me or burden them with my ideas when they're not so great coming out of the gate. But so I'll continue, pursuing the solo performing, put this band together and record the next CD. Will be with the band, not a solo bass CD, kind of like After the Harvest was a solo CD. This one will be more an ensemble bass thing, and then I want to take that group out and start performing with the group.
What about long-term plans? Maybe not necessarily long-term, like 10 years, but are there pieces that you've got in the back of your head right now that you're not dealing on that you've been thinking about for a while that you may want to implement?
I've always wanted to do a piece for a guitar and orchestra. And so that's one thing that's been in my head ever since I learned how to write for orchestra in music school. I've wanted to do it, but I never found a good reason or angle to do it. Just writing a piece for guitar and orchestra, it's like, well, so what? But again, that's something else that flamenco got me excited about again, because it's kind of almost a tradition in flamenco guys, not a tradition, but it's just a common thing that's how they'll close out their CD, is a piece for guitar. And usually it's string orchestra. They don't always have a full-blown orchestra, but it just sounds so beautiful. And I'm like, oh, that's a great way to do it, where it's not trying to write some 35-minute concerto that's in three movements, that's this monstrous thing. They'll just do a 5-minute piece, this gorgeous piece, for one guitar and a string section, although sometimes they use other, like the woodwinds also with it. But that's another project that I'd like to work on. And then just, take this band and see how far I can take it, see how much interest it can stir up, how interested are people. It seems that people have Americans have a great interest in flamenco. And so even though I'm not this, high-end flamenco artist from Spain, the fact that I can take some of that music, I can take what it is that I can play and combine it in with jazz, which is much more, even though it's still somewhat of an off-the-beaten-path American music form too, it's got a much broader base of potential audience for it. A lot of festivals already exist for it.
We talk a little bit about the instrumentation of the band. I know it's at a traditional...
Yeah, boy, that's concept. I'm still deciding that, so I don't know. I don't really have an answer. I'm looking at possibly two percussionists, bass and guitar. Maybe having a keyboard player, maybe not.
No drum set?
Probably not a drum set, although I've listened to some flamenco records in the last couple of weeks that have made good usage of, occasional usage of a drum set, but not...
Here's a good question. What have you been listening to? What flamenco have you been listening to lately?
Well, as far as the guitarists go, I've just been trying to pour over all of it to digest it, but my personal favorite guitarist is Tomatito, and just because something about the tunes that he writes just really get to me, they talk to me. The best guitarist is Gerardo Nunez. He's just like a technical monster, but yet not to the point of being stupid. It's still flamenco, and it's still really beautiful. It's just kind of the kind of thing where you shake your head and go, oh, man, come on. It's hardly possible. But and then for the sound of the guitar, Vicente Amigo is the, my favorite sounding guitar player, just the tone he pulls from the guitar. And then also he has an interesting approach that I think would appeal to an American audience in a general sense. He's kind of found a style of flamenco that he's developed that's pure but not at the same time. It's got a lot of influences of American jazz and fusion and even some of the pop jazz. But he, because he's such a great guitarist and just a great artist in general, he's been able to avoid the cliches and the baggage of making it sound like New Age or schmaltz. It's very pure sounding, but yet also falls easy on the ears and does some things that would make it appeal to a wider audience. So I've been listening to him for some lessons on how could I bring this music to people and not make it the kind of thing where I'm just playing, you know, off avant-garde rooms and in the corner for nobody kind of thing.
Why is that important to you?
Because I think that's a very good question. It's important that music talks to a lot of people. I had a discussion last week at work with a woman who's not a, she loves music, but she's not into music, that she seeks out lots of advanced music or avant-garde music. And she has no experience with jazz. Classical music, she knows virtually nothing about other than the big names that everybody knows about. And so we were talking about, gosh, what was the band? What was the style of music that we were talking about? Well, it came up with the Gypsy Kings. Are they flamenco? Well, marginally. They took this one little very populous style of flamenco, popularized it even more as far as the style goes, made it very palatable to American audiences in particular and just world audiences in general. And now all of a sudden people are discovering flamenco through that. And she was saying that, well, gee, lately I've been listening to a lot of the country music that's on like the big country stations. And I, of course, immediately wrinkled my nose and said, that's not country. That's like the worst garbage. That's all the bad hair metal producers from L.A. moved to Nashville and you're using the same tricks to like make slick, glossy. She's going, well, I don't know. Maybe you're right. But I used to think I hated country music. But now all of a sudden I've been listening to this music and it made me decide that I don't hate country music. And so now I've been going back and looking at artists like Hank Williams and other people who are country who I never would have even allowed in my house a CD by them. And now I'm actually checking them out. So is it bad what those guys are doing? Because they turned me on to a kind of music that I was like, oh, you've got a point. You know, so it's something down those lines of there's a lot of people out there. And yes, it's good. I love elite music and music that hardly anybody's going to listen to because it's very difficult and dangerous and complex. But I don't want to spend all my time in just that zone. I'd like to do something that would appeal to a wider brand of audience because I could then take little pieces of all of this music, be it from the flamenco purist, you know, or the guitarists who play just pure flamenco, or the avant-garde artists like an Ornette Coleman or the AACM, or, you know, any of the strange artists, you know, some of the avant-rock artists that I like, take little pieces from them and bring it into a music that would appeal to a wider, broader audience space. And not only would it educate them without talking down to them, but hopefully it would inspire them because a lot of these artists are doing things that are very inspiring and very inspired. You know, they're trying to change the world for the better. The problem is that they're not reaching a lot of people with it. So, that's
and
why.
What good does it become at that point?
Right.
No one hears you.
Right, exactly. And that's a little bit of a problem, but you can't, I don't fault them in any way, shape, or form because they're playing the music that's inside of them. And so they're not trying to be avant-garde or do these things. That's just what's natural for them. They're just doing it. They're following the muse. They're following the inspiration that's inside them. So, you know, it's not that they're doing anything bad by ignoring the mainstream audience. They can't. It would be phony for them to do it. Whereas I don't feel like it would be phony for me because I like some music that's a little bit more towards the mainstream. And so it would be a very natural thing for me to do, not forced, like a sellout or a pandering to the audience or talking down to them or anything.
How about the obligatory influences question?
Oh, gosh, that's so hard because I could go on forever with it. You know, right now it's those flamenco guys that I mentioned, along with going back and looking with all at the artists that I was so into back when I was like raising my level of musical knowledge. You know, people like a weather report, or guitarists like Alan Holdsworth and Pat Martino, or even the Pat Metheny group, who's, you know, that's something I listened to a lot when I was younger and haven't for years and stopped, but now this is causing me to go back and listen to it. So, you know, in that sense, those are my current influences, even though it's rediscovering past influences. And then in classical music, it's, you know, Arvo Pärt and Steve Reich of the modern composers are definitely two favorites. Also, Witold Lutosławski, who's a Polish composer who passed away in the 90s, and he's been a big influence for a number of years. And so those are kind of the current, but, you know, ask me in 6 months and the list will change.
Right, as it should.
Yeah, as you're right. So, yeah. I think that's good. I can't think of any other stuff to add. So, any other questions?
Cool. Well, you visit michaelkentsmith.com for more.
Right.
Happening?
Yep.
So, you're a painter as well as a musician. Tell us about the combination between both of the arts.
Well, they feed off of each other. I almost never view them as directly connected, whereas this painting has to do with this particular music composition. That almost never has anything to do with it. A rare instance would be the cover of After the Harvest. I made that right at the time that I thought of the concept for that record. It was sort of, I was working on the, it's a woodcut, so I was, you know, carving the wood, and I just sort of whimsically came up with this story for the guy and who he was and why he was, and I said, that's kind of like these songs I've been working on. And then, of course, the light bulb goes on over my head that, I can use that. I could use that as the theme. This guy gave me the theme for the record, and that allowed me to take the pieces that I was working on, choose some, reject others for the recording. Plus, then I recorded three more after that that are kind of like, once I had the vision in my head of how I wanted it to be, I needed to fill out certain aspects of it. So that's a real rare case. In fact, that may be the only case where the music and the art had any direct crossover. But I use it in the sense of, I first got back into painting when I was a little kid. I long before I ever played music, I drew and painted all the time, and I quit as a teenager. And then when I started the guitar, I never ever went back to the painting thing of it. But what got me interested in going back was getting stuck on the music. I was at a compositional crossroads. It was after the time that I kind of turned my back on jazz and walked away and didn't know what I wanted to do now, and was sort of fumbling for a direction, and decided to, I just had this idea, let me try messing around with the visual art again and see if that inspires any musical ideas. And so I started dabbling, trying to create visual images, and it just completely hooked me, and I got back into it on its own front. But I think somehow it did also serve its purpose of redirecting my music and focusing that and allowing me to find a voice in that too. So I just view them as completely parallel tracks. So they have everything to do with each other, but really in a way nothing. There's no direct connection, this piece, this song, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I remember when you started getting back into painting and you were hardly playing music.
Yeah, that is true. And it seems to go that way in waves, where after my first trip to Spain, just seeing all the great Spanish artists got me totally inspired. I came back and I hardly played any music for months after that. It was all just paint, 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 paint. I was really into painting. And I just finished After the Harvest, so it was also perfect in that sense that I was burned out from this recording production process. So I switched over to painting and did that. Now, this recent trip to Spain, it was all about the flamenco, so it's just the opposite has happened. I haven't touched a brush in months, and it's all been about the music. Great. And so they tend to go back and forth like that in big swings, but when the pendulum's closer to the middle, I'll work on both, even in the sense of I'll be painting, and then I'll want to take a break from painting, I'll walk, and I'll go over and practice for a while and play to clear my mind from the painting, and then come back and use them that back and forth. But again, not like I'm writing the music that has to do with the painting. They're going total different, maybe parallel directions is the best way to describe it.
And I almost misspoke when I said that you're a painter and a musician, but there's a lot of other mediums that you work in.
I've done a lot of print making, and that would be the second meeting. You know, I draw sometimes too, use pen and ink and make pen and ink drawings. But so those would be the three things: the pen and ink drawing, the printmaking, which is in itself there's a whole bunch of mediums within printmaking, and then painting in acrylics lately, mostly because of the it's easier to clean up.
You had said before that you tend to think of the art and music separately, but have you thought about combining those two into something else?
Maybe. You know, the thought of the video, using the video element to bring visual elements to the art performance, I mean, to the music performance, that would be one way to combine them. Although, you know, as we've never really been able to pull that off or figure out how to make it all happen, to use the film and the art. And another thing I've thought of would be stage set design, using art, using big like murals and posters, or, you know, I'm not even sure exactly what, but almost like in the ballet, a lot of, you know, Picasso for the Paris Ballet made lots of sets for them, and Marc Chagall as well did a lot of ballet sets. And so it's, you know, just making a scene for a stage. So maybe that, but as of yet, I haven't figured out how to make that happen, or even just haven't done it.
I see a lot of new paintings down here. Actually, ones that I've probably just not seen. I think they're too new. They look like they're older.
Yeah, there's a mix here of ones that are from a year or two ago, things that are from a year. The last batch has been more of the semi-abstract things and not the realism. So that one's new. And then some of those other ones, the two women over there, are of the last batch that I did while I was working in oils before I switched to acrylics.
Paintings and guitars.
Yep.
You're almost starting to get more. Actually, you probably do have more paintings than you have guitars now.
Oh, several times. Yeah. Many, yes.
Because you're not a guitar collector.
Not exactly. I've got, you know, a dozen guitars, and there's no space for or need for any more, so my collection's pretty full. From now on, it's kind of like swap one out and replace it with another one, right. But I'd need a bigger house.